Good morning. Apologize for the late start, council was giving a welcome aboard briefing to our two new resident members who we introduced last month, but we actually get to have seated with us this morning. And so it's not the new commissioners that caused the late arrival. And technically, it's not really our council that is responsible, because after he finished giving his briefing, I started talking. And everyone in this room knows that once I start that, no telling when I'll stop. And as evidence of that, I'm now going to call the meeting to order for, I've lost track of the day. Is it March 14th? March 14th, 2014. At 9:10 in the morning, and we have a quorum present. Commissioners Urtasun and Waring are not present, but we do have the quorum, so we will proceed. A few housekeeping rules, which those of you who attend regularly are probably sick and tired of hearing me say it, but the law says I will say it anyhow, so therefore. Members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission are invited to do so, but they must fill out a speaker request form. Speakers normally are limited to 3 minutes each. Collective testimony by those who support or oppose an item shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes total per side. We've only made one exception to that rule, and I think we ended up with about 30 minutes per side. On that. The public may ask for an item to be pulled from the consent agenda by submitting a speaker request form. Comments on non-agenda items are heard at the beginning of each meeting. Please fill out a white-colored speaker request form and hand it over to our secretary, Angie Rosani-Rios. To speak on a matter listed on the agenda, please complete a speaker request form and submit it to Angie as well. You would submit that before the item is called. If you intend to speak in opposition to the item, please fill out a pink-colored form. If you plan to speak in support, fill out a gold-colored form. On that note, we'll move then to the agenda. Open it up. I have no request for public comment. If anyone rushed in and didn't have a chance to fill out the form and just dying to make a public comment, please raise your hand. We'll get the form in. Seeing no indication of such rushing behavior, we'll move on. Commissioner comments. Commissioners, do you have anything to say? Nope. It's a quiet group of commissioners this morning. Moving along again, it's time for the report by our President and CEO, Mr. Gentry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not going to be quiet this morning. We got three or four items I want to just make announcements on that are accomplishments or achievements since the last board meeting here. On February the 25th, the Housing Commission had the good fortune to be part of the grand opening for the Fairbanks Commons complex, which is 163 new affordable apartments in Black Mountain Ranch, which I think reflects the northernmost activity that this agency has been involved in within the city of San Diego. We issued tax-exempt bonds for that property. We were joined at that grand opening by commissioners Grambling and Davis, and we appreciate both of you all being there. And this property, as in most of what we're involved in, is pledged to remain affordable for at least 55 years. 2 days later, on February the 27th, I participated in a news conference with interim mayor at the time, Todd Gloria, to announce a new location for the Homeless Transitional Storage Center. The storage center has been moved to a Housing Commission-owned paved lot on 16th Street, the 200 block, as I recall, in downtown San Diego, from its current location as part of the St. Vincent de Paul Village. The Housing Commission administers funding from the city to maintain this center, which will provide a safe place for as many as 350 homeless individuals to store their belongings in clean bins, getting those items off the streets and sidewalks. We will be bringing to the board next month an agreement to lease the lot to an organization called the Girls Think Tank, which will operate the homeless storage facility on our property. Relative to homelessness, there are a number of efforts ongoing, as the board is aware, to rethink the whole issue of how we address homeless needs in San Diego, one of which is a staff effort we have ongoing, which I have termed Homelessness 2.0, where we plan to bring to you all a new look in a comprehensive way about the way we do homelessness services here. My plan is to have that to the board for a workshop setting in either May or June, but it'll be before midsummer. Different but related, Mayor Faulkner has asked me to serve on his Housing and Homeless Subcommittee. We had our first meeting this past week, earlier this week rather, and this is a subcommittee that will provide policy recommendations for the mayor's, quote, Housing for All, unquote, plan, and will make recommendations to address housing and homeless issues in San Diego. And the new mayor is expecting to have some recommendations on this and some other areas at the end of about his first 100 days in office. Related in a way but different is the workforce housing offset, otherwise known as linkage fees, which I think is the issue that's never going to go away. The City Council last week, on May the 4th, made a decision to rescind the ordinance that they passed early or late last year and to reconsider the workforce housing ordinance, both its level and its methodology. They referred the issue back to me, back to the Housing Commission staff, with instructions to bring forth a new set of recommendations by June the 30th this year. I will have that back to you all for conversation at least well ahead of time, assuming that there's something I can bring back. And in closing, I'd just like to ask you all, if you would, to look out to my right past the windows here. There's some issues in the skyline here beginning to take shape for us, and both physically I want to point out to you that the tower coming out of the ground, the Celadon Tower, is an affordable housing property being developed by Bridge, which is a large nonprofit out of San Francisco. We issued tax-exempt bonds for that, and we also have promised 80 project-based Section 8 vouchers to that property to house the homeless when it is completed. Since the time, and if you look to that tower and look two towers to the right, there is a property, San Diego Square, that's been here about 40 years, houses the elderly. It is an old Section 8 new construction project that our nonprofit affiliate, the Housing Development Partners, took title on since the time of the last board meeting. As you all know, HDP has been negotiating with the previous nonprofit that owned that facility and also City Hall, and the city owns the land under it. We've been beginning negotiations on that probably 3 to 4 years since the HUD office in Los Angeles suggested that the Housing Commission take ownership of that property. We own it now through HDP, and are in the planning process for its redevelopment, which will occur beginning later next year. And as always, to my far right is the Hotel Churchill, which we have owned through and are developing now through Housing Development Partners as well, which we also hope to have plans ready for construction toward the end of this calendar year. So we are beginning to develop a pretty good-sized campus that we're involved in within the side of our office building here. Also, Mr. Chairman, in front of you are copies of the e-blast, which Maria Velasquez and our communication shop sent out on February the 28th, highlighting some of the accomplishments over the previous couple of weeks or so, and be glad to respond to any questions. Also, one final thing. Almost forgot. I'd like to point out that not only do we have two new commissioners, in Commissioners Hubbard and Davis, but we also have our chair and vice chair, Grambling and Spoon, who were reappointed finally since the date of the last board meeting and will be in office at least another 3 years. Thank you all for continuing to serve.
Okay, thank you. At this point, I've got to do a little an additional housekeeping item. We have two meetings actually scheduled for today, the regularly scheduled meeting for the month of March, which that notice went out as normal. Then we have a special meeting that will follow that, and that notice went out to the public a few days ago and does, in fact, comply with the Brown Act requirements in terms of public notification. On the first meeting, our regularly scheduled meeting, there have been two agendas that have been posted. The first agenda, and then that was replaced roughly at the same time, or the same day, which was more than a week ago. And we're actually operating off of the second agenda. And so I'm saying that I think there may be possible to find this, the second agenda. There's only one item difference. Two different items have been classified between the two of them as item 100. But we're working off of the second posted agenda. I'm saying that because now I'd like to propose the consent agenda for the regularly scheduled meeting. And the consent agenda I'm proposing is that we move item 100, which is titled, what did I do with the computer? She took it.
It was a trick.
It was a trick. Okay. Right. The item 100 that I intend to propose be moved to the consent agenda is titled Revised 2014 San Diego Housing Commission Meeting Schedule. So, is there any discussion on that suggestion? And if not, is Commissioner Moraga has moved approval of the consent agenda. Commissioner Spoon has seconded that motion. Any additional discussion? Hearing none, then I'm going to call for approval of the consent agenda. All in favor say aye. Opposed? The consent agenda has been approved unanimously. Okay, having taken care of that item, then we'll move to item 50, which is the approval of the minutes of the February 14th regular meeting. You've all received copies of those minutes, and how do you feel about that? Commissioner Moraga has moved approval of the minutes for February 14th. Is there a second? Okay, and I apologize. Davis. Right. It's going to take me at least another day or two to get used to the new name. So the minutes have been seconded by Commissioner Davis. Any discussion? No indication of such. I'll call for the vote. All in favor of approving the minutes of February 14th, indicate by saying aye. The minutes have been approved unanimously. Next, we'll go to item... Item 101, fiscal year 2014 CDBG funding addition for Veterans Homeless Emergency Shelter. And who's going to present that? The gentleman who lost all of his business cards there.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Davis, Chief Operating Officer here at the Housing Commission. With me is Melissa Peterman. She's our newest Senior Program Analyst with our Housing Innovations team. Melissa joined our agency in October of 2013, and she brings over 5 years of experience in the field of homelessness. Among other things, she's currently overseeing the contracts for homeless services at our winter shelters, the Neil Good Day Center, and the Cortez Hill Family Center. So I'm happy to introduce Melissa to you. Today we are asking the board to recommend the Housing Authority approve an additional fiscal year 2014 CDBG funding for the FY 2014 five-month contract with Veterans Villages of San Diego. This is for the operations of the Veteran Homeless Shelter. The budget will be increased by the amount of $19,331 CDBG, and as a result, the service levels at the emergency shelter will not diminish. So I'd like to ask Melissa to provide a brief synopsis of the issue for you.
Thank you, and good morning. Due to sequestration, the Veterans Homeless Emergency Shelter experienced an approximately 24% cut to their FY 2014 Emergency Solutions Grant Award. To partially offset the decrease and mitigate its impact, the Housing Commission's Housing Innovations Department worked with city staff to identify additional FY 14 CDBG dollars. Use of these funds was unanimously approved by the San Diego City Council on November 5, 2013. Under the current agreement, the Housing Commission President and CEO is not authorized to increase the contract amount or contemplate any contingency funding for the shelter. He is only authorized to substitute funding sources. Therefore, we are requesting the Housing Authority approve the addition of $19,331 in FY14 CDBG funds as part of the five-month contract, allowing VVSD to utilize all allocated funds totaling $497,442 by the last night of shelter on March 31st, 2014. Thank you.
We should mention that Phil Landis from VVSD is also here to help answer any questions you have, as are we.
Commissioner Spoon has a question.
I have a question for the Finance Department. Is Nicole here? Nicole in the back? Nicole, what fund does this money come out of? It's just local funds? Got it. Thank you.
Any other questions, discussions? Phil, why don't you stand up? Okay. You're a veteran. You've been a target before. And to you, sir. We like to comment on the fact both of us are veterans. So, and I'm asking them to stand up only because I've had the opportunity not only to tour the Veterans Village, but also the temporary shelter that we have that they are maintaining. And I just want to tell you that in front of everybody that I really am impressed by the job that you and your organization do. And both facilities run smoothly, from the public point of view. You know the day-to-day operations, and nothing's ever as smooth as it looks on the outside. And the good work that they do, because they're looking after veterans, and it's not just the typical soldier-type veteran. We now also have to make sure that we're providing relevant services to female veterans who have come upon hard times as well. And so, once again, I just want to tell you, thank you for making our participation easy. Job well done. Okay, there was no discussion, so I'm going to call the question. Actually, I can't call the question. We didn't have a motion. I don't know. You're taking up all the glory of making the motion. So, okay, Commissioner Moraga has moved approval of the recommendation from staff. Is there a second? Second is from Commissioner Hubbard. And thank you, Angie, for putting the signs up now on that. Is there any additional discussion?
Can I ask one more question?
Commissioner Spoon?
I'm sorry. It took me a little while to formulate my question. How many female beds are there? How many female beds in the new project and how many in total?
Thank you.
Yeah. It was how many of the new beds, how many are for women? All of them. Well, that's wonderful. How many people in a unit? Two people in a unit. And our schedule says it's $197,000 per bed, so it's about $400,000 per unit. Approximately, yeah. And is Veterans Village providing the land? That's good. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your answers. Thank you. Pardon me?
All right, I'm going to call the question now. All in favor of the motion as made by Commissioner Moraga, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Next is item 102, which is the loan recommendation for Veterans Village Phase 5. And we may have had a little bit of a crossover between the questions, but that's okay. We can ask them a second time, and at that point we'll ask Phil actually to step up to the microphone so that his comments will be recorded.
Good morning. As Ted is getting the PowerPoint together, I just wanted to provide an overview. My name is Ann Kern. I'm Senior Director of Housing Finance and Development. With me is Ted Miyahara, the Real Estate Project Manager for both this item and the Willie James Jones item. I do want to point out that in Attachment 4 to the report, we did have an error on the development summary. The total development cost on page 3-1 at the bottom of the page is actually 3,941,447, which is $197,072 a unit. This project is not prevailing wages. As a comparison of the two projects that Ted's going to be discussing this morning, there is a divergence in cost. You'll see that the Vietnam Veterans Project is about $197,000 a unit. The Willie James Jones project is just over $400,000 a unit. The VBSD project includes 8,000 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor, which is a slightly lower cost than you have in a multifamily development. VBSD has a non-prevailing wage cost, which basically decreases the need for additional subsidy. Prevailing wages typically drive costs an additional 20%. If you look at the square foot cost between the two developments in hard cost, the VBSD project is about 170 a square foot versus 190 a square foot. And as mentioned earlier, there are no land costs in the VBSD project. And in addition, there's no parking requirements, so no need for parking spaces. Willie James Jones, there's about $2 million in land cost. 3- and 4-bedroom units. The units are larger. They're 1,200 to 1,500 square feet versus 700 square feet. It does have prevailing wages. It was previously entitled as condo development, and so as when they purchase the site, it does drive the cost because it's already entitled. And the Willie James Jones site will be LEED certified. So those are kind of a comparison of the two projects and why the costs are so divergent. I do want to mention that with this Vietnam Veterans Project, they did apply to us.
I'm going to correct you.
Excuse me.
Okay, it's Veterans Village. It's not Vietnam
Veterans. Village of San Diego.
Because it covers a much wider array of veterans than just the Vietnam.
Thank you.
I'm not diminishing the importance of the Vietnam veterans. It's just we've got so many more since then.
Thank you. So Veterans Village Phase 5 applied to us several years ago. And they originally had planned to finance their project with redevelopment agency funds, and then the dissolution of redevelopment agencies came along, and that has delayed the project for the past several years. We are happy to say that the redevelopment agency, or the former redevelopment agency, has moved through. They previously had funds identified, still are able to use those funds for this development, and we have Tracy Reed with us from the City of San Diego on this project as well, and now we're able to move this project forward with the addition of Housing Commission funding. With that, Ted Mirahara will begin his presentation.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Veterans Village of San Diego is located at 4141 Pacific Highway in Council District 2. Phase 5 will include 18 transitional housing beds and two studio manager units. The 18 beds are composed of two-bedroom apartment-style units with a kitchen, bath, and come fully furnished. Phase 5 provides housing for the female population enrolled in the program. The ground floor includes counseling space for the residential units, a library, gym, dentist office, laundry room, and storage space. The project will comply with the San Diego Housing Commission's Sustainable Development Guidelines. The project will include Energy Star appliances, hard floor surfaces throughout, low flow fixtures, LED lighting throughout, and drought-tolerant landscaping. Veterans Village of San Diego, also known as VBSD, is a nationally recognized nonprofit providing housing and services to veterans. The VBSD campus provides a continuum of care for military veterans, including housing, outreach, intake and assessment, supportive services and treatment, links to permanent housing and permanent supportive housing, and aftercare. Programs and counseling services include substance abuse recovery, mental health counseling, job training and job search assistance, and legal services. VBSD currently owns and operates 524 transitional housing beds in San Diego County. VBSD also operates the Veterans Homeless Emergency Shelter. Construction of the first phase broke ground in 2003. This is the final phase of the campus. Once completed, the campus will provide a total of 362 transitional beds and two manager units. The campus is designed to move residents through a treatment program that provides transitional housing, case management, and support services. It is expected that after 2 years in the program, the majority of tenants will achieve and maintain income sufficient to move away from the campus. The Housing Commission has participated in each of the previous phases. Total investment in the campus is approximately $8.5 million. The loan request before you today is approximately $1.4 million. The total development cost of the project is approximately $3.9 million. Other funding sources include $1.7 million from the City of San Diego, $500,000 from the Federal Home Loan Bank, a $200,000 Home Depot grant, and $50,000 from the county. The beds will be restricted to 50 and 60% of the area median income for a 65-year term. Monthly tenant-paid rents are estimated at $250 per bed. Veterans Administration grant per diem will supplement tenant rents and cover operating expenses. That concludes our presentation. Phil Landis and Ken Trimble are here from BBSD, and Tracy Reed is also here from the city.
Commissioners, any questions? Okay. Commissioner Spoon says that all of her previous questions were asked on behalf of this issue, not the previous one.
So, Nicole, what is the source of these funds?
Nicole DeBerg, CFO, San Diego Housing Commission. Good morning. The source of these funds are prior year entitlement funds that are in what we call HUD help reserves right now. They are available because of the timing of other projects that didn't come in. Those funds are free, clear, available, and if you approve this use, we'll be drawing those down when they're spent. That is correct.
It's mainly home funds with a small portion of inclusionary funds.
$10,000. I just wanted to point out that when we're involved in these efforts in the real estate department, frequently the money is a blend from a number of primary sources. We may call it local funding, but it originates somewhere. And I think that's more probably the point of what Commissioner Spoon was asking. This is primarily the HOME program, which is a federal program authorized in 1990, which is money that flows through the city to us, is the most flexible of any of the federal programs I'm aware of, gives us a lot of latitude in how we use it. This also has a small amount of local housing trust fund monies directly from the city. This one happens to be from the Inclusionary Zoning Program. Could easily just as well have been from the Linkage Fee Program as well. But we tend to blend these monies together.
Any other questions? Thank you, Nicole. In that case, I'll look for a motion. Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the request by staff. Is there a second? Okay. Speak up. Commissioner Davis has seconded the motion. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, call the question. All in favor of the proposal as submitted by staff, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Phil, keep doing the good work. But don't let all my compliments go to your head. Good idea. Okay. Item 103, preliminary items pursuant to issuing multifamily housing revenue bonds for Willie James Jones Apartments.
Good morning.
I want to see the logo on that at the front of the community.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ann Kern, Senior Director of Rental Housing, Finance, and Development. With me again is Ted Miyahara, a real estate manager. And I failed to mention before, welcome to our new commissioners, Hubbard and Davis. Very happy to have you here. Before we provide you the details of this transaction, I do just want to give a little bit of information regarding the Multifamily Housing Revenue Bond Program for the benefit of our new commissioners. The Housing Authority of the City of San Diego is authorized to issue bonds for multifamily rental housing developments in the City of San Diego. And typically they are tax-exempt financing, and a lot of people like that because usually you get lower interest rates on tax-exempt financing. The other really wonderful benefit is that developers who apply for bond financing can get 4% tax credits in their developments, and 4% tax credits are equity. So they're in essence free money with some strings attached, but they really make these developments work. Bonds are just another term for a loan. These bonds are purchased typically by banks. The commission doesn't put money into the bonds. We're just an issuer, which is called a conduit issuer. The banks fund the developments, and the payments from the bonds are paid from the development rents and gross income of the development. So there is no risk to the Housing Commission. This item before you this morning is a preliminary bond item to start the process to issue multifamily housing revenue bonds for Willie James Jones Apartments. The site was previously entitled as condominiums and, as detailed in staff report, is now proposed as an affordable housing development serving persons with disabilities. I believe this is the first project we fund that deals strictly with this population. The requested action today is just for the preliminary bond action. Staff will return with a loan recommendation in May or June, along with the request for final bond approval. With that, Ted Miyahara will give you an overview of the project.
Good morning again, Chair and Commissioners. Willie James Jones is a 32-unit new construction project located in the Lincoln Park neighborhood of southeastern San Diego. The project address is 327 South Willie James Jones Avenue. Cross streets are Euclid and Imperial. The site is 1 acre of vacant land bordered by single-family and multifamily housing. The project will consist of 33-bedroom units and 2 4-bedroom units. 25 of the units will be set aside for households that include a member considered developmentally disabled. The development is within close proximity to the trolley, an elementary and high school, public park, grocery store, and retail. The project will be LEED certified or equivalent. The bond financing will require 20% of the units to be restricted to 50% of the area median income, and the remaining units to be restricted to 60% of the area median income. Low-income housing tax credits and MHP financing will restrict units to lower AMIs ranging from 30 to 50%. Three-bedroom rents range from $550 to $975, and the four-bedroom unit will rent for $675. Willie James Jones Limited Partnership will be the owner of the project and consists of Chelsea Investment Corporation, Southern California Housing Collaborative, and a tax credit investor. Chelsea has financed and developed over 6,600 units of affordable housing. Southern California Housing Collaborative is a local nonprofit with a mission to locate and secure affordable housing opportunities for low-income individuals with developmental disabilities. Southern California Housing Collaborative will provide comprehensive services to the population, including a part-time supportive housing coordinator. The San Diego Regional Center has also committed a part-time service coordinator to the project. The development will be financed with tax-exempt bonds, 4% tax credit equity, MHP loan from the state, infill infrastructure grant from the state, soft loan interest, seller note, deferred developer fee, and housing commission loan. Chelsea has secured $3.1 million from the MHP program and $1.7 million from the infill infrastructure grant program. Staff is currently working with the developer on terms of the housing commission loan. A formal loan recommendation will come before the board in May. The issue of some bonds do not create a financial liability to the housing commission, housing authority, or city. Any bonds issued will be repaid from project revenues, and the developer is responsible for paying all costs of issuing the bonds. The housing commission will receive a $25,000 bond issuer fee and an annual $10,000 bond fee. Staff recommendations to the board include: recommend that the housing authority approve a $10 million bond inducement resolution and application to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee. Recommend that City Council hold a TEFRA public hearing. Approve Jones Hall as bond counsel and PFM Group as financial advisor, and authorize the executive director of the housing authority or designee to execute all documents necessary to implement these approval. This concludes our presentation. Matt Gross from Chelsea is here, and Mike McSweeney from Southern California Housing Collaborative is also here to answer any questions. I think Mike McSweeney from Southern California would like to say a few words.
Okay, fine.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I'm Michael McSweeney. I'm the chairman of the board of the Housing Collaborative, and I just wanted to give you kind of a flavor of what it is that we do and the type of population that's been almost invisible as far as the affordable housing community goes. We are funded, as most providers are, by the Regional Center. The Regional Center, by income, is probably the single largest social service agency in the county. They have a budget of $262 million a year. They spend $233 million serving approximately 23,000 clients between here and Imperial Valley. They are a 501c3, and I wanted to tell you that basically that the types of folks we're looking to serve in this type of a project would be families with a person with a disability, perhaps their cerebral palsy, they're in a wheelchair. We'll have accessible accommodations built into these units. We'll have elevators. But the interesting thing is approximately 80% of the adults serviced by the Regional Center live on SSI. So their income is approximately $900, which is 20% of AMI. So the types of clients we're looking for are families with a child that's disabled, or perhaps people in independent living. I have a younger brother who is now 43 years old, lives in a group home in La Mesa. Somebody like my brother teamed up with another roommate in a three-bedroom unit, they would have live-in staff that allows them to live as independently as possible. So the area you're able to take two people at 20% of AMI and allow them to live independently. This is huge. And my brother has a couple of former housemates from his group home that have gotten their own apartment. That's all he talks about. So we'll answer any questions if you've got them. Thank you.
Commissioner Moraga had a question, I believe, first.
Excuse my ignorance on this, but can you explain the deferred developer fee? Whoever.
Matt Gross, Chelsea Investment Corporation. So the developer fee that is allowed to be earned per certain regulations and guidelines is 15% of the total, what they call eligible basis. And we're required, based upon different funding regulations, to defer and not collect as a cash paid fee a certain portion of that. So that's what the deferred developer fee is. So it's fee that we would otherwise earn that we are not taking as cash paid fee and will be paid out of cash flow of the project.
Traditionally, that runs over, what, a 10-year period, I believe?
Yeah, we're actually, for tax purposes, we're required to show that it is paid out over 15 years.
Commissioner Spoon?
question about the bond amount. It appears the bond amount will be $7,850,000, and you're asking for $10 million. Is there a reason for that?
Yes. When we do the initial bond inducement and the TEFRA, we always increase the bond amount in case there are changes in interest rate or construction costs, because the numbers are initially preliminary. When we get to a final bond issuance, we put the actual amount at that time.
And then, regarding the developer fee, if I could just get back with you for a minute. So the total developer fee is 1.4, is that right?
That sounds right. I don't recall off the top of my head, but it sounds right.
1.4, and you're deferring 600 of that amount?
Correct.
And then, that's it. Thank you.
Actually, come on back. Yeah, just stay there for a moment. In terms of the on-site development, will there be security fencing on this?
Yeah, there'll be controlled access gates. There's two entrances. The site is developed with kind of a horseshoe-shaped, three buildings and a horseshoe drive that goes in between. And so there'll be secured entry and exit on both sides.
Will there be a on-site community room or a facility of some nature like that?
It's actually an interesting question, because we've been debating that internally. The site plan actually called for 33 units, and we elected to convert one of the units into an on-site community room that's fully accessible, including an elevator. So we reduced the number of units from 33 to 32 and converted that unit so that on the second floor there's actually a manager's office and a community room, in addition to a community space on the third floor with parking underneath for visitors. So, yes.
Okay, but that community room will be, since it's on an upper floor, will be fully accessible.
That's correct.
And approximately how many square feet will that room be?
The total net square footage is about 1,205 square feet.
For the community room?
Correct. Well, that's including the manager's office.
Okay. Okay. And then on-site also, will there be any kind of a physical facilities for the young children that certainly will be present in there to be able to play safely within the community?
There is a tot lot that is adjacent to the community room, immediately adjacent to the community room, so there's outdoor recreation space as well.
If the community room is on an upper floor, is the tot lot on an upper floor?
We couldn't afford that. It's on the lower floor. So, yes, it's on the ground floor adjacent to the garage. All the units have two-car garages, enclosed parking, and so the tot lot will be on that level.
And, Ann, I believe you introduced this topic initially by saying that this project would also comply with all of our sustainability guidelines.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Commissioner Hubbard?
Okay. Mr. Mayahara, okay, you mentioned that the three-bedroom is arranged between $400 and $900, and the four-bedroom is a set price, $600. What would make the three-bedroom be higher than the four-bedroom? Why is there a range for three-bedroom?
Rents are restricted to from 30% of the area median income to 50% of the area median income. For the three bedrooms, I believe there's 33 bedrooms and two four-bedroom units. One of the four-bedroom units is a manager's unit. It's not restricted, so there'll be one rent-restricted four-bedroom unit, and that's why the rent for the four-bedroom unit is restricted at $675.
And the four-bedroom unit is restricted at 30% of area median income, which is kind of the lowest of the range, which is why it's lower than the three-bedroom.
It's part of the financing requirements with the MHP and tax credits.
Commissioner Spoon?
What source of funds is it that causes this unit to require prevailing, or this project to require prevailing wages?
The multifamily housing program from the state. And home funds would, if they could, trigger prevailing wages as well, depending on the amount. At this point in time, we don't think that the commission home funds will trigger prevailing wage. It's the MHP funds that are triggering prevailing wage. That's correct.
Yes, typically the home funds, the way that works is if you fund more than 11 home units, you trigger prevailing wages, so we typically try to minimize that impact.
I have another one. Would you explain the relationship between the contractor and the developer, and are there occasions in the projects that you build that you bid out the contractor?
The answer, well, let me start with the first question. The relationship is that the contractor, we have an affiliate. So we self-perform nearly all of our contract work. We certainly also perform in a capacity where we have a third-party contractor. Generally speaking, where we're the developer, we bid out all of the subcontracts. Typically speaking, we only self-perform about 3 to 5% of the total contract, and we only act in a general contractor capacity. Does that answer the question? Yes, there are occasions when we are not affiliated with the contractor.
Was that the case during the Mercado, I believe?
That's a little more complicated, but we built the Mercado. Shea Properties was the developer on the retail space, and they contracted with they engaged with the contractor to build the podium in the retail space. We actually built the residential space above the podium. So we were affiliated with the residential part of the contract, but not the commercial part of the contract.
Okay. Any other questions, discussion?
No.
Is there a recommendation or a motion?
So moved.
Okay, Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the proposal for the Willie James Jones Apartments. Is there a second? Commissioner Hubbard has seconded that motion. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call for the question. All in favor of the proposal, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen. And thank you, staff. Okay, item 104, fiscal year 2015, moving to work annual plan.
Good morning again, Chair and Commissioners. Jeff Davis, Chief Operating Officer. With me is Suket Dayal, our Director of Strategy. I'd also like to point out our project manager on this MPW initiative, Jessica Adamo. Last month, we came before you with an overview of the initiatives that are contained within our proposed FY 2015 Moving to Work Annual Plan, and this is before you today for requested approval. We received some very valuable input from the board that workshop day, and we have incorporated your suggestions and comments into this final version. Suket's going to now provide you with a brief summary of our proposed initiatives.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning. I will briefly summarize the three initiatives for our fiscal year 2015 Moving to Work Annual Plan. The first initiative is expand the project-based voucher program. This initiative was first proposed in our FY 2010 plan, and we'd like to include additional flexibilities in the program, like approving exceptional payment standards and requiring project-based tenants to engage in supportive services as a condition of the tenancy. The second initiative is modify the 40% rent burden requirement. Brief history, the Housing Choice Voucher Program limits the rent burden at initial lease-up to 40% of the participants' adjusted monthly income, which oftentimes reduces the housing choices for our families. The Housing Commission staff took into consideration the valuable feedback that was received from the commissioners at the workshop last month regarding this initiative. We also worked with our team and looked at our numbers again, and we'd like to modify this initiative to raise the maximum allowable rent burden to 50% of the participants' adjusted monthly income at initial lease-up. We feel this will provide our families with the additional flexibility to move into units for reasons like access to better transportation, better schools, or prospective employment. The third initiative is enhance the Family Self-Sufficiency Program. Again, a quick history. The Family Self-Sufficiency Program services are offered free to all of our HCV participants, and they serve as a means to achieve economic self-reliance. Current regulations require that a family's head of household participates in the FSS program and signs the contract of participation. What we're requesting authority to do is to permit other adult household members also be offered this opportunity in case the head of household is unwilling or unable to participate. Now, the non-head of household enrolled in lieu of the head of household will have to enroll in our Achievement Academy. We feel this will expand the scope and remove the barriers for our families and really approach our families with a whole holistic approach as helping our families succeed. We respectfully request that the Housing Commission Board approve the FY 2015 MCW Annual Plan and the implementation of the three initiatives therein. We're happy to address any questions you may have.
Commissioners, any questions? Seeing no indication of such, what would you like to do?
I'd like to propose a motion to pass the moving to work plan as presented.
You'd like to do that? Okay. Yeah. Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the Moving to Work program as submitted. Is there a second? Commissioner Davis has seconded the motion. And any discussion at this time? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye. Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously. See, after last month's workout, today was easy.
We'll take it.
Is Nicole present? Oh, okay. In that case, we'll call for item 105, workshop and discussion, San Diego Housing Commission proposed fiscal year 2015 budget.
Jeff Davis, Chief Operating Officer. With me, Nicole DeBerg, our Chief Financial Officer. We have a budget workshop for you today, which is intended to give you a comprehensive overview of our budget process and policies, along with a detailed explanation of our funding sources and uses. That's included in our annual budget that covers the operation of fiscal year 2015. Nicole will walk you through the presentation now.
Thank you, Jeff. The Housing Commission provides rental assistance, self-sufficiency programs, first-time home buyer support, home rehabilitation services, homelessness initiatives, and we operate 2,232 units of affordable housing. In summary, the San Diego Housing Commission is proposing a $337.3 million balanced budget for fiscal year 2015. The adoption of this budget will impact approximately 50,000 San Diegans. Despite economic challenges, the Housing Commission has increased its fiscal year 2015 budgeted revenues by 6% or $13.9 million. The increases were mostly due to increased move to work, affordable housing, and home fund revenues. Operating revenues decreased due to a combination of reduced capital development efficiencies, reduced single-purpose funding for specific grant activities, improved long-term reserve management, HUD grant reform-driven budget policy changes, and the reversal of HUD's reserve recapture efforts. Our fund balance increased due to enable fiscally responsible long-term strategic reserve management in response to the unpredictable funding environment we're operating in, and to reflect the estimated reserve requirements based on the completion of our property needs analysis for a portion of our owned units. We are delighted to say that we have finally achieved our long-term goal of reaching a minimum level of 5% of reserves for our contingency reserves, as recommended by the city's independent budget analyst. Overall, we are presenting you with a budget that is characterized by prudent operational and financial management, the integration of long-term planning considerations, and the maximization of resources for innovative client services. The Housing Commission accomplishes its mission by employing an organizational structure that has three main operational divisions: rental assistance, real estate, and the Housing Innovations Division. Our main operations are supported by our administrative support groups, such as procurement, IT, HR, and communications. Our budgeting process is comprised of three stages: goal setting, data compilation, and hopefully today your approval. As you can see, our budgeting process in total takes about 6 months. The process starts with the generation of agency-wide goals that are then translated into strategic, divisional, and departmental deliverables and resource requirements. The outcome is a detailed, activity-based budget presented to you today in this workshop. The final budget will be approved by the Housing Authority in June. The fiscal year 2015 goals and objectives for the agency are driven by our mission to provide affordable, safe, and quality homes for our client families and individuals. The goals on the upcoming pages have been the driving force behind the construction of this budget. As you know, these goals were derived through our strategic planning process, and they have been presented to you on January 17th, so we're not going to go over them again. Next, we're going to outline the Housing Commission's budget policy and process. The Housing Commission budget is required to be fully balanced, which essentially means that we're not going to let our expenditures and available ending fund balance exceed our available funding sources at any time. Fund balance, according to Generally Accepted Accounting Principles, or GAAP, refers to amounts earned and recognized as revenues in prior fiscal years, and it's commonly also referred to as reserves or carryover. So, how do we actually get this budget to balance? First, we figure out how much money we actually have to allocate. For each divisional activity, we project out what our beginning fund balance is going to be, and then we're going to add the current year new revenues to it. Divisions and activities operate on what we call a subsidized spend what you earn approach, in that each division first uses the revenues they generate on their own to support their initiatives, and then the executive team allocates revenues that can be used by more than one activity, according to our strategy. Our unrestricted fund balance is set to 5% of current year revenues based on recommendation from the city's IBA, and our property reserve levels are based on tax credit allocation committee per unit guidelines until the full completion of our GPNA, which is green property needs analysis. So let's talk a little bit about reserve strategy in general. Seasoned and experienced financial leaders adjust their reserve strategy according to the prevailing funding environment. In a predictable and increasing funding environment of the past, the Housing Commission used to budget to deploy all of our funding sources available for our clients as soon as they became available. There was really no need to keep above minimum reserve levels, as new funding was sure and ample to come in every year. These times have changed, and so has our reserve policy. Sequestration, the looming debt ceiling, and reoccurring threats of government shutdowns have caused us to budget at higher reserve levels to shelter our clients from unpredictable support fluctuations that can negatively impact their families. As a result, you'll see that in this budget, we have substantially increased our reserve levels to ensure that our families will not be subjected to evictions and discontinued rent support, which many housing authorities, as you may have read in the paper, have experienced in the past year. Now let's talk about our debt policy. In contrast to the federal government, we do not use or incur debt to finance operational shortfalls, ever. All debt owed is fully serviced by the assets or activities which were financed when the debt was generated. To ensure proper and transparent governance, we do not change our board-approved budget unless drastic environmental changes necessitate a full budget revision, which then would be proposed to you mid-year. Post-approval, budget amendments in excess of $100,000 must be approved by the Housing Commission Board, and amendments in excess of $500,000 must be approved by the Housing Authority. Now let's talk about some of the factors that have been affecting the compilation of our fiscal year 2015 budget. On December 26, 2013, the federal government's Office of Management and Budget finally issued a complete overhaul of its existing administrative requirements and cost principles. Even though the final impact of this regulation is still being assessed by legislators, it appears that the housing authorities will be, for the first time, required to complete a formal indirect cost proposal, which requires us to change from a capacity-based budget approach to an actual expenditure-based approach, given the fact that total direct costs are quoted to be one of the primary allowed allocation-based drivers in this new regulation. Another factor impacting the fiscal 2015 budget is the final completion of our state sites conversion and renovation. We operate 113 units of housing, which are in dire need of renovation, which is mostly financed via Section 8 rental housing factor funds. HUD's proration change for administrative costs from 69 to 75% has resulted in increased move to work revenues as well. Of course, also included per our union MOU requirements is a 2.5% COLA and a 2.8% addition for potential performance incentives. Now let's look in more detail at our funding sources. The majority of Housing Commission funding is restricted by the funding authority in regards to the use of the funding. In 2015, the Housing Commission only had 4% of truly unrestricted funding sources. The majority of this funding is generated through bond issuance fees and ground lease and miscellaneous income, and it can be used for any Housing Commission activity. As you can see on this slide, 68% of our funding is derived from federal sources. Move to Work represents $206 million, or 90% of our federal funds. The majority of Housing Commission's local funding is derived from our San Diego Housing Commission-owned properties and other local initiatives. On this slide, you can see that even though the majority of our funding is derived from Section 8, local and real estate division funds are of increasing importance in our mission to create affordable housing. Now let's go over some of the revenue increases. The increases in Move to Work funds is due to a combination of changes. As you all might recall from my previous slides, we're currently renovating the state sites, and included in this budget is an additional $5.3 million in Section 8 rental housing factor funds to rehabilitate these 113 units. Also received additional public housing operating subsidy funds to support the operation of the former state sites, and we're also now seeing increased admin funding from HUD due to the reversal of sequestration. Local real estate funds increased to reflect an adjustment based on actual market rents projected, and local affordable housing funds increased mostly due to fund balances available from prior year for pending but committed projects, and an adjustment of the current year budgeted revenues according to actual trends observed. You can find further detail about the changes in revenues on this slide, but in the essence of time, I'm going to move on to our expenditures.
58% of all of our funding is used to support our housing programs, while salaries and benefits only use 7% of our total funding allocation. The next biggest slice of the pie here represents our programmatic expenses, which essentially our programmatic reserves, which essentially represents amounts collected to be spent on programs in future fiscal periods. This slide shows our uses of funding by expenditure type. The decrease in housing program expense of $7.3 million is primarily due to the aforementioned change in budgetary policy to properly reflect actual anticipated expenses and the reservation of approximately $12 million for permanent supportive housing for the homeless, which is not expected to be funded until fiscal year 2016. This set-aside is part of a strategic plan to address homelessness by the Housing Commission in partnership with other stakeholders in the city. The increase in salaries and benefits is primarily due to the aforementioned COLA and performance incentives for our currently active MOU, offset by a decrease in 11 positions. The increase in property expense is primarily due to the reclassification of interest from services, supplies, and other to property expenses, coupled with a small increase in utility and maintenance costs to reflect expected actual increases. Capital expenditures decreased due to the usage of available development funds in prior years, and our ending reserves increased for a variety of reasons to be discussed in the reserve section of this presentation. Reflecting our continuing focus on process optimization, our staffing has decreased by 11 positions while maintaining the same level of service. On this slide, I just wanted to point out that benefits have overall make up 26% of total compensation, and we do not have a defined benefit pension plan. On this next slide, you can see the detailed breakout of the Housing Commission salary increases and our position decreases. Given the $652,000 in savings for the 11 positions, including fringe benefits, these reductions save the Housing Commission about $850,000 per annum. Now we're going to take a look at expenditures by activity, but before that, we're going to take a quick look at reserves. This slide... are you guys still awake? This slide outlines the budgeted changes in reserve levels. As some of you may remember, last year HUD was on a quest to recapture Section 8 in public housing reserves in excess of 1 month of operating expenditures due in part to sequestration. As a result, in order to protect reserves from recapture without delivering a benefit to the constituents of our community, the Housing Commission included all reserves in excess of 1 month into the Move to Work operating budget and marked them to be fully expended in the interest of affordable housing in San Diego. Most recently, however, HUD has repealed their intent for reserve recapture. This fact, coupled with the experience, frankly, of living through a governmental shutdown, which I have to tell you was not a lot of fun, prompted the Housing Commission to increase Section 8 reserves from 1 to 2 months of operating expenditures to ensure our families are adequately protected. Furthermore, the San Diego Housing Commission is part of a task force made up of the top agencies in the country to advise HUD in regards to financial strategy and policy. In fact, on February 4th, Mr. Gentry was asked to present the advantages of the Move to Work status at a congressional staff briefing at the Capitol. And during the same visit, the financial task force we are part of advised HUD that Move to Work reserves should at minimum be comprised of 2 months of operating expenditures, so which we finally now have. Also included in the increase in programmatic reserves is a $2.5 million contingency for home administration, as the city now, this is a new HUD regulation, unfortunately, the city will now be drawing down home funds on behalf of the Housing Commission. There's also an increase in affordable housing fund reserves for the aforementioned strategic plan to address homelessness, which is expected again to be funded in 2016. The increase in property reserves is due to the availability of data from a portion of our GP&A analysis, which shows that the Commission needs to increase its total property reserves to approximately $32 million in the next 5 years.
So we're slightly short on that one. Slide 32, we're almost there. If we analyze the budget on an activity-based level, you can see that 54% of the Housing Commission's funds are obligated in the Rental Assistance Division, and about 40% is spent on the creation and operation of affordable housing. Now, it appears here that only 2.5%, or $8 million, of our resources are spent directly on homelessness issues. However, that is not correct. Our Rental Assistance Division has allocated nearly 1,400 subsidies valued at approximately $11 million directly to support the homeless in fiscal year 2015. Furthermore, out of the 37,602 people served by our Rental Assistance Department, 27,972, or 74%, are extremely low-income individuals, and 13,827 people out of this number are elderly or disabled. Therefore, we can state with confidence that without Housing Commission support, the current homelessness number of 8,879 people per our 2013 point-in-time count would drastically increase. So altogether, this represents our true impact on homelessness in the city. This schedule shows a more detailed breakout of our operations departments. The decrease in operational expenditures are due to a variety of reasons. In rental assistance, our Path to Success initiative resulted in programmatic expenditure decreases. In housing innovations, conservative revenue estimates for homelessness-specific grant funds have had a corresponding effect on grant levels. Reduced development expenses have decreased our property operations. Rental housing finance, loans, and grants have been reduced to reflect actual throughput capacity, lengthy deal timelines, and realistic reserve levels. In the homeownership department, the expected unavailability, unfortunately, of CalHome funds from the state has decreased loans made to first-time homebuyers. Reduced home and unrestricted funding allocations have decreased our Home Safe Home Department expenses, and the proper shifting of loan default protective program funds from expense to reserve has reduced the loan management expenditure budget. So now we're going to go to everyone's favorite subject, overhead. On this schedule, you can see the various departments that make up our operations support divisions, aka the overhead departments. In total, the good news is operation support has decreased by 5%, reflecting our continuing commitment to process optimization. And now I will summarize my presentation as follows. We are asking you to entrust us with $337.3 million of taxpayer funding, and in return, we're going to continue to assist approximately 14,500 low-income households through federal rental assistance, assist 70 households to become first-time home buyers, support the financing of 486 affordable housing units, rehabilitate 233 homes and apartments, operate 2,221 units of San Diego Housing Commission-owned housing, support programs that provide shelters to move more than 3,300 homeless individuals, and day services to 3,600 homeless individuals, and help 800 families that receive federal assistance to work towards self-reliance. Thank you for your attention, and now I'm going to open it up to any questions you may have.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes, I'm curious. It's good that the reserves have been increased. I was curious, is there a plan in place already for client services in case of an emergency or a major disaster? Is there a plan for that in the budget?
Yes, the agency is working and continuously restructuring the disaster recovery plan, if that is your question. And in regards to the reserves, we do actually establish these reserves based on a plan when we don't, you know, we just experienced the government shutdown. We had sufficient reserves to cover our clients in case we didn't get the funding ahead of time.
Okay. I was thinking like God forbid, but our the major earthquake they're talking about or something, is that you pay attention to that too, to notify and take care of clients that might immediately be without homes and everything?
Yes. Or do you want to?
Wonderful.
Oh, actually, Debbie would like to answer this question.
Good morning. I'm Debbie Verwaine.
Like that.
Good morning. I'm Debbie Ruane, Senior Vice President of the Real Estate Department. Yes, we actually have set reserves up. We're actually in a major project right now called the GPNA, or Green Physical Needs Assessment, and are coming up with a 20-year estimate for funds we need to set aside to maintain our units. We also do have adequate reserves in case there is a major earthquake, as well as great insurance coverage.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Commissioner Spill? Go for it.
Thank you very much. I met with Nicole on a couple of occasions, more than a couple of occasions, to go over all of this and have reviewed it in detail with Nicole. It was very well prepared, very thoughtfully prepared. She's gathered, the entire department has gathered information from many different sources, and I am certainly very satisfied with the outcome. So I just wanted the board, the fellow commissioners, to know that I have reviewed this in detail. And I'm, number one, I'm very, very proud of the department for putting this together, given all of the things going on at the same time, audit conversion, and the new process for developing the budget. So I think it's been very well done. I do have some questions that I think could clarify some of this. Some of my questions I know the answers to, and some I don't, but don't be nervous. Regarding the fringe benefit percent, page 28, it shows basically 27% of payroll for fringe benefits. Nicole, how does that compare with other municipalities or agencies? Is it high or low or right in the middle? Or, and I don't need specific numbers, just how does it compare?
We looked a couple of years ago, actually, we looked at the cities. The cities is a lot higher. First of all, their pension percentage is a lot higher because they have a defined benefit pension. I think they're currently at 38, so don't quote me on that. That's
right.
What I remember, though.
Mm-hmm.
So they're usually a lot higher. We are lower in flex benefits, and we're lower in pension. And that's really all I know, but we're around definitely. I mean, the last one I looked at was 38. It also depends from municipality to municipality, but we're on the low side.
There's no defined pension plan, but there is a pension plan.
Yes, there is.
And it's included in this 27%.
Yes, it is.
Moving on. The reserve levels, page 30. You mentioned that that represents in the Section 8 area 2 months of reserve. Now, what is your thought on that? How does that compare either with the guidelines from HUD or from other agencies?
You know, the other agencies, as I mentioned, have been getting together in Washington where I'm going to let Mr. Gentry answer this. You were going like this.
Thank you, Nicole. With all due respect to our friends in Washington, D.C., we cannot trust their judgment. What they did 3 years ago was to summarily reduce all the non-MTW agencies down to 1 month. They concluded they couldn't do that because the move into work agencies have a contract with financials built into the contract. However, a year ago, during the sequestration, There was a proposal by the administration to pull the MTW agencies down to 1 month as well. I think it's utterly and totally nuts. I think 2 months is a minimum. More would be better, particularly when you see what the feds just tried to do with to us in sequestration. Frankly, we, and part of the numbers that you see here as well, commissioners, in targeting more money to reserves and reducing some expenditures and some staffing level decreases, we were getting ready for sequestration too. We're only 3 months into not having that facing us. The fact that the Congress passed a budget in December of last year, that's a two-year budget, which actually shows a slight increase in monies to our industry, maybe 1 to 2% a year for each year for the next 2 years, gives us some comfort. And we were getting ready to brace for another 5 to 10% reduction. So I think that the level of when sequestration hit us last year, we were able to weather that storm better than most agencies that you've read about because we did have money squirreled away, to use a highly technical accounting term. So what we're trying to do here is to make sure that we can protect ourselves not only from the vicissitudes of the business, but also the idiots on the banks of the Potomac as well.
And while we talk about that, the fact of the matter is that that sequestration did result because we had the reserves, we were able to keep most of our program going. But the reality is we lost in the neighborhood of 750 client recipients of our housing assistance. Even though we're moving to work, and that's the best classification you can have among our type of agencies, there was still an impact there that translates to the public in a way that is painful. So one of the things I'm pleased with is that we've essentially budgeted for a no increase in expenditures other than our reserves, as I look at it. And, in fact, decreases in some places to help make up the rest of the reserve that we're trying to do. So that's pleasing because, once again, to use the colorful words of our CEO regarding the idiots on the banks of the Potomac, if they do come around and give us some additional monies, then we can expand our services. So I thank you very much. This is a non-action item today. It's an information item today. But I personally thank you. Commissioner Spoon, did you have some more?
Nicole, how does the reserve percentage compare with the city's reserve requirements?
So the city's independent budget analyst recommended that we have 5%. However, in February, the city increased their own reserves from 8% to 14%. So we are probably on the low side, but given our programmatic reserves level, we feel confident that 5% at this point is adequate. But other agencies are probably, I mean, the city is certainly higher.
And you mentioned that there's going to be a requirement for additional funds for rehab of the properties that will be required by 2015 or 2018?
Yes. As Debbie indicated, we're currently going through a property needs analysis. The preliminary outcome has shown that we actually really need to up our property reserves. But until the finals come out, we're not going to address this because we'd like to go on perfect data when we put our plan together.
Moving to page 32, when you were talking about housing innovations at $8.3 million, the pie chart for housing innovations. In your presentation, you indicated that there was another value for, I think it was for Section 8 vouchers of $11 million. That's in addition to this. Is that right?
Yeah. What we've done to we usually are being asked, you know, what our impact on homelessness is. And the truth is, in the Section 8 rental assistance number, there is $11 million of vouchers that could be purposed or are targeted to be purposed for the homeless.
Okay.
So, and the value of that is $11 million.
You know, I think it might be useful if we added another slide, just because I love these slides, of the total amount that the Housing Commission provides for the homeless program.
It's a great idea. We will do that.
Okay, good. Page 33, the reserve number, shows a $44 million increase, but it's my understanding much of that is already committed to projects that are either proposed or pending in the works.
Mm-hmm. So I have, I can give you the detail essentially. So Move to Work is 29 of that. That represents your 2 months. Then Rental Housing Finance has a lot of committed projects, Encanto, Hitske, Community Housing Works, and then the Permanent Supportive Housing and State Vets. That amounts to $20 million. Then we have another 2.5 in the home admin. The majority of this is committed. There really isn't anything that's available. You mean uncommitted? There is $5 million for to-be-determined projects in rental housing finance, which could be one or two projects, but you really need to leave a little bit of capacity in case somebody comes with an opportunistic project that Rick wants to.
You know, it might be a good idea, too, to add another bit of detail, differentiating between committed reserves and uncommitted. That way we wouldn't beg the question while we're sitting on money when we're not.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a very significant point. The numbers are very large. Of all of that, there's about $5 million of discretionary money. Uncommitted. As of this point.
And thank you for sticking with us through the process and of review, and we always appreciate your help and input. Thank you. And thank you to my staff for going through this. I've been driving them nuts, so thank you guys.
Mr. Gentry?
Four very brief closing remarks on this item. Number one, to Nicole, you and your staff, thank you. This is an excellent report. There's even better work behind it. And it shows a rational management of our money and the process. Thank you. It's wonderful. Also, I'd like to point out that this is not just an exercise by the finance department, and this is not an accounting exercise. A budget is not a financial statement. It's a management tool. And this reflects everybody at this organization. You know, both Jeff, you, and not only the rental assistance department under you, but the support staff, including finance, everybody's done a great job. Debbie, the RAP department, Red department, that's done such a wonderful job with their real estate. This was the first real budget that we've done in the 6 years I've been here. And it reflects counting real money instead of just guessing. And it reflects what I think is a change in agency culture, which I was hired to help preside over 6 years ago. And it's taken 5 years to do it, which is not unreasonable. And this reflects a different way of thinking, a different way of looking at the business here, and a different form of management entirely. So to everybody here, all the decision makers in this room, finance and otherwise, this represents wonderful work, and I think it's a good indicator of where this agency is now. And, Mr. Chairman, the fourth point is our Vice Chair, Commissioner Spoon. He was the best I've ever seen to look at numbers on paper and knowing what's really going on. It's just remarkable. Bobby has been a guiding light in this for the whole 5 years she's been on the board. And my personal thanks to you, Commissioner Spoon. Thank you very much.
I think there's one thing that all of this has pointed out to me, and that's how important the real estate department is. The real estate department is really funding the programs that have funding have no other funding source. Much of the homeless work is coming through the cash generated through the real estate department. So that was a tremendous decision that was made years ago.
It really was, and that reflects board members and staff who were here before any of us at the dais here. But I think it also reflects part of the different mode of thinking here now versus 5 years ago, and that is we now have lines of business. Before, we had programs, and the difference is in government, when you have programs, you spend whatever money you happen to be lucky enough to get. In a line of business, you understand you need to generate income as well as spend it, and that the way to serve your customers is by both. And I think that the shift in mentality there here is light years away from where it was 5-6 years ago. That reflects excellent policy on the part of the board and first-class work in executing that policy by the staff as well. It really is a different agency from, say, 2008-2009.
I will absolutely concur with that, especially the idea that when you have programs, you spend. Having been involved on more than one occasion in budget upgrade requests on behalf of the military or departments of the military, they never operated within a true budget. They created a target, knowing that come June they were going to go back over to the Pentagon and ask to have the target moved up. What the practice that we've generally tried to follow, at least during the last 5 years, is that a nonprofit, which is what we are, is a tax status, not a business plan. And this budget represents a business plan. And that's a world of difference. So thank you very much to the staff on that. And I also concur with the thank yous of Commissioner Spoon on that. All right. Thank you very much for the item. This is an information item. I expect to see it probably next month for an action item. We've covered the agenda for the regularly scheduled meeting this morning. And so I will move adjournment. Is there a second? Commissioner Moraga has seconded my motion. In favor, say aye. Okay, the regularly scheduled meeting of March 14th, 2014 is adjourned. Now I'm going to reopen the regularly scheduled meeting and turn the table over to council.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The commission will now meet in closed session to discuss its closed session agenda as referenced on the regular meeting agenda. With regard to that, we would ask that the Executive Vice President and all right. The commission met in closed session to discuss its closed session agenda by a vote of 3-0 with Commissioner Moraga, Davis, and Hubbard voting in the affirmative with two abstentions. The board voted to give directions to counsel concerning the litigation. That concludes the matters that were discussed in closed session.